And we have a forum and a safety briefing. We are going to break this, by the way, so that some of you don't have to get through the time. Please go to the rear of the forum. If this building is meant to fire a fire alarm, you can type it up in your story at the restaurant in the courtyard, Table 6. The defibrillator is located on the right wall steps as we're going down Penn Avenue staircase, which is on the first floor minus. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and they'll provide a security to the front desk. And then your fire extinguisher in this room is right there behind the desk. And you're going to go ahead and turn this over to any shot to this week. And we want the action JLA for JLA with this room. And I'll make sure
the unclear whether the sound system is operating, I can barely hear you, Madam President. That's not the security.
Sorry,
I have to press the button on the front.
Make it, the button needs to be red. Yes.
Yeah.
Hello.
Un, deux, trois. Good.
Hello. Is it on?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Beam in.
What?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good. I'm not going to repeat the safety briefing.
Sufficiently safe.
Do you feel sufficiently safe? Good. That was my goal. I'm going to call on Andy Shaw and Tyler Frisbee and Gene Lawson from Gene Lawson Associates to be able to walk us through the conversation on the regional transportation investment measure outcomes discussion.
Great. Thanks for having us back again.
Thank you.
We had a fantastic conversation last week about direction for staff and for Council President Peterson as we head into this transportation task force discussion and broader engagement. So that was last Thursday. Today we are here to seek thumbs up on a final and wordsmithed set of direction to talk about potential... talk about a process for starting the conversation about potential corridors to look at to advance the task force discussion and to get a thumbs up on the charge for the task force. We will be coming back next week on the 7th with a resolution asking for confirmation of task force members, and we're hoping to launch the first round of meetings for the task force at the end of next month, which just starts tomorrow, next month, and really dive into the work in March, April, and May. We've been doing rounds of phone calls to task force members to invite them on, and people seem very willing to dive in and get engaged. So the real questions today are we comfortable, is the council comfortable with the language of direction? And we've given you two different sheets just for purposes of document control. There is a clean version that was sent out earlier, so you can compare back to what you saw earlier in the week. And there is a redlined version, which has literally red lines on it, that is an edited version and includes some edits that occurred just today in a conversation amongst a couple of you. So it should include all of the latest revisions that have been suggested, and that's the version we'd like to talk through with you today. And then again, after this, walk through, look at the corridors, concept maps, and look at the charge. And Gene, did you want to say anything to start off with?
Sure. I guess just to point out, I'm stepping in for Allison Brown, who worked with you last week on this, and she and the staff have briefed me on this. My sense of the content of the agenda today, as well as the amount of time we have, is that my role in facilitation will be pushing you. And I just want to assure you, you can push back if I push you too hard. So that was pretty much it.
And just on that note, we don't have a whole lot of time today, so in the spirit of pushing, we're pushing because we want to get through this content so we can launch the task force and get all that work going. So the first section is back to the top part of the direction component, which is the structure of the measure, the concept of corridors, the three different components. We tweaked the language around corridor definition per the conversation that you'd had to make it a little broader, not seeming so stuck between centers, but talking about all the kinds of important areas and centers we have throughout the region. We heard the comment about near-term, long-term, that people's definitions of those are very different, so we've changed that to first phase, second phase, and then modified some of the programmatic elements per the suggestions that you had.
So our first question is, did they hear you correctly? Did they capture the essence of what you were looking for in that?
Madam President, are we looking at the red line language to make that determination?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
For the most part. I mean, I guess the answer is the one we saw earlier in the week, for the most part. I think the red line version has some adjustments to it that we had some discussions more recently that help satisfy the concerns that I have.
So really, right in this slide, we're just looking at this first part structure.
Sorry. Okay, yeah.
And there were no additional red lines from the earlier version, so. All right, if we can move.
You needed a red line. Anyone else still need a red line?
So we'll move on then to the priority section, which I think is where there was a lot more discussion and there were some more recent edits. We have both red lines and green lines. Just to be clear, in Word, green means you've moved something from one place to another place verbatim. Red is actual edits and deletions. Yes. So to walk through this, I think the main thing that we heard last time is around the use of regionally raised revenues. And the suggestion was to sort of parse it out between the interstate system and a couple different types of state highways that function as that have limited access, and state highways that actually function more like regional arterials.
And if I might, you'll see in the red and green lining, colleagues, some changes that I proposed that describe a regional revenue strategy for arterials regardless of ownership, local or state. Those state highways or roads that serve as arterials would be subject to the same expectations as our investments in city and county arterial streets. And that's the first bullet. Regionally raised revenue will be invested in regional corridors.
Now I'm looking at the language on the screen, and I'm looking at the language on the paper, and it's...
Look at the language on your paper. That's, yes.
It's not the same.
The language on the screen, because we have to put the PowerPoints and grant in through the system, was before the edits that were decided upon at noon today.
Those are nice pictures to look at, but they're not the text of what we're acting on. We have sheets of paper in front of us, and I guess we have the same documents in Granicus here.
Just to clarify, don't look at the PowerPoint. Just use this redlined version. That's a week old now.
Yeah.
The PowerPoint is a week old. Yeah.
So these do basically say the same thing. This just shows what the changes are. This is...
Okay, there's a clean version as well.
Actually, there is a couple of places where the language is slightly different, but it's phraseology. It's not intent.
So the intent was to capture what we thought we heard, which is... an interest in looking at investments that could help support the state's investments and federal investments in the interstate system that may be adjacent to or crossing over or connected to those interstates. And then separately on key state highways like 217 or 26 numbered highways that are limited access, looking at the ability to partner with the state, but not being a major investor. I think one of you said a junior investor in some of those kinds of projects, and with a third category of these regional arterials really having the focus on investments in those to make a variety of improvements. That was the spirit of what we thought we heard, and we tried to capture that here along with edits that have been made today.
But I would direct counselors' attention to the actual language under the bullet point that says interstate system, mm-hmm. because Well, there's one change that didn't get made that was recommended, but let's go through it. It says, interstate system, these corridors move people and goods through the state. The Metro Council expects the state to continue, and it says primary responsibility. I would suggest, and we had discussion, eliminating the word primary and just identifying that the state is
responsible. I like
not
that.
Just primarily responsible.
And if you look at the clean version, that is...
Okay.
So we need to work off of one piece of paper.
Let's work off the red line.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that the clean version may have that.
And then, if I may, the probably the major change in actual motive comes after that, where a responsibility for investment in this statewide system, and then regional investment will be considered on components of the interstate system within our region in order to advance their state investment priorities. This is to make clear that we identify that the state is responsible for funding and constructing improvements to the interstate highway system, that the regional government is not. However, similarly to what we did with last year, was it last year or 2 years ago, when we provided regional flexible funds to ODOT to advance the planning for the Rose Quarter bottleneck improvement, we would be willing to...
And 205.
Okay, yes, that's correct, yeah. That we would be willing to provide some investment into the process so that those projects continue to be advanced, though not making what we must make clear that we're not to be considered a partner in the construction or funding of those projects.
So can we be more specific in the language then?
So how would you do that?
Well, I think the language, I would suggest that the language as modified does that.
The way it's written right now, when you say modified.
I'm sorry?
The way it's written right now. So
then mean? I would remove the word primary.
So removing that. So, Council President, you had...
I guess I would just suggest that I would feel more comfortable if we were more specific. Regional investments will be considered a component of the interstate system within our region. In order to advance their state investment priorities, that's too wide open for me. If we are willing to be a part of the planning, then I think we should state that up front. If we are willing to be part of the off-interstate system improvements, then I think we should be willing to state that up front. But I think that this is saying that we will basically open up the opportunity to allow the state to ask us to be a partner on interstate projects, which we are clearly saying in the first sentence that that's not our case. That's not our intent.
If I may, Madam President, you're pointing to planning and development scale investment is consistent with Councilor Dirksen's description, and certainly consistent with my support of this insertion, that if we have the opportunity for dimes on the dollar, well, pennies on the dollar at the scale of this stuff, to signal to Region 1 and the state that this region believes that a particular investment in the interstate system meets our regional goals, that we would, if necessary, offer planning and design front-end money
assistance
to move it from the bottom drawer at ODOT headquarters up into the priority list in time for it to make a difference in our mutual concern about overall transportation needs in the region. Not a blank check, not a commitment to always provide planning and development money, but when we can strategically advance something that this region believes is important.
Agreed, and I'm just saying it needs to be specific language that's added to the two intents. I believe that I've heard are one for planning money and one for the off-system improvements to better connect whatever interstate work is being done by the state back into the regional system.
Support those distinctions.
Well, I guess I would agree, and I want to be cautious about really getting into a situation where we're letting the state off the hook on their responsibility.
Right.
So I don't want to be in a situation where it reads to me a little bit open in terms of how what are the limitations on that? And what, you know, Councilor Gonzalez, what are the
I believe they're called sideboards.
But if it's planning and development, that there's a limitation there. Is that if we're clear about that language?
Yeah, if we're clear about those two things and adding it in here, then I'm
remove investments priorities with planning and design
and off system.
Okay.
Improvements
yeah.
that tie back into our regional network.
So just to be clear,
and it sounds like you are all in agreement, and please let me know if not, that we are taking out the state investment priorities piece out altogether and just stating planning
and design
and off system improvements.
For the interstate.
For the interstate. And that's specifically under the... So with that, I know there was a real robust discussion last time around this issue.
No, not so much on this particular point.
Okay.
And I want to be clear that, speaking only personally, I'm very disappointed in the way that ODOT proceeded with our help and is in the process of designing a project that not only ignores impacts on the immediate vicinity of the Rose Quarter, but is planning to run a public participation program that encourages people to log in and text a response. So I regret that decision of the Metro Council, and I hope we can do better in the future in the way we encourage ODOT to meet our targets for state investment by making modest investments. Maybe we need some more front-end assurance about how it's going to turn out in the end.
Okay. Yes, Councilor Lewis, you have it.
Nice point. Bus on shoulder.
Well, that would be, yeah.
It's actually in, isn't it?
I think the project itself hasn't been designed. So if we were to participate in the planning and design of I-205 widening, that would be a part and parcel, but we would not be working to construct it. That would still be under state purview. Yeah.
I'm going to do this all day. Thank you for that.
Would you just, I don't know the definition of off system you said. What does that mean?
So, off system improvements in ODOT terminology are you have your everything within the right of way would be on system, everything off of the right of way in just generic terms would be off the ODOT system. So, it would be on the regional system then. So if you have I-205 coming through, you're redoing the interchanges, they may not be willing to bring everything up to the standard that we would want for pedestrian, bike, and transit connectivity or greenery or safety, some component that we feel needs to be added back into the system because it was taken away or could be taken away that we could add to that part of the system to reconnect everything back up. Or with the Rose Quarter, have a conversation about what else should be part and parcel about that LID in order to get more regional benefit than statewide through traffic benefit.
A point of clarity, and it was a challenge for me both in conversations with Councillor Stacey and with President Peterson, when we talk about the regional system, the interstate system within our region is part of our regional transportation system, but it is not part of the regional transportation system for which we are responsible.
There you go.
But when people make a blanket comment about the regional system and dismiss the interstates, I think that can be a dangerous statement.
It's not a target for capital investment by this region.
I had a specific point I wanted to make. I think from the conversations that all of the councilors were having, there's a point missing in the way we frame the language, and that might also be, I'll ask for clarification. When we say that we're willing to fund planning and design to move a project from bottom priority to top priority, I wouldn't necessarily want that to be a way for the state to forego its responsibility if it was already going to.
Absolutely.
Essentially, I think we need to add language that says when strategic or as strategically decided by council at the end of that sentence and paragraph so that the way that it's currently phrased, I feel like we leave it up for interpretation where it could already be the number one. And ODOT or whatever statewide agency could decide that.
So it makes sense to add something about to advance regional strategic regional priorities instead of the state priorities to advance strategic regional priorities by investing in planning and design and off-road improvements. Would that work?
To support planning and design because I don't want to be on the ticket for all of the planning.
Yes.
To support planning and design. Did you get all of that?
I guess it's hard to be clear about what I want to achieve there.
By supporting planning and design.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's difficult to be precisely vague.
So this is where I'm going to get into the push. You guys remember that that this is basically guidance. This isn't regulatory.
Guidance.
This is guidance to send your council president as she goes and works with the task force and others. Does this capture your intent well enough that you're confident you can send this off?
I think so. Originally it said at the beginning of the sentence, said if necessary. And I kind of like that because, and we decide when it's necessary.
Yeah.
So
you decide when it's strategic too,
yeah.
Right?
Right. That's a good idea, yeah. Is add the word if necessary.
Yeah. I support that.
I would add that back in.
Is everyone okay with these changes?
I am.
I'm seeing heads nod. Councilor Gonzalez, are you good?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an acceptable compromise for me.
Pardon? Oh, she's cracking a choke.
All right. Oh, okay, Christine.
I was warned.
She is.
Pretty mad about this, that's right. Okay. All right. Moving on, Andy.
Yes.
So at least for me, the rest of it is much simpler.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
The next section is process. I don't think we had editing changes there.
Yeah, we have no changes. Well, we have changes from the discussion on the 24th, namely the process will be transparent with materials and decision-making readily available to the public. That's the significant change. No changes.
Where are you again?
So under council direction,
okay.
Process. Mm-hmm. So we've moved on to the process section. The third bullet is an addition after your conversation on the 24th.
Yes.
A comment that I would make is I know that the regional investment strategy is on a tight timeline. And I know that the points here are intended to address some of the feedback that we receive from our jurisdictions during the housing bond. Yes, please, everything we can to put things out in advance,
yeah.
And that we can point to and say that it's been here for X number of days,
yep.
So that, which is why we have this entire transparency and accountability. I just want to reinforce that.
Yes.
So with that, all good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
The next section is design and risk management. And the major takeaways from the conversation on the 24th, clarification that the funding will not be used to support project and cost overruns, addition to specifically say that projects must increase safety, mobility, and accessibility for people of all ages and abilities. We had some conversation around performance-based practical design and what it means to apply that through this process, and we tried to capture your feedback there. And then,
I do comment that the third bullet, where there was significant revision, is much cleaner and smoother with the new language.
Great. Yeah. So I was going to come back to that and say there were some changes from the 24th, and then some additional amendments this morning to clarify the role and clarify the questions when we have arterials that are owned by the state but work like a local road, and how we want to address them in this process. The clarification is namely that we expect that they will be designed to align with regional guidelines and meet regional needs rather than state guidelines.
All good?
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Guys, we're flying. The next section is outcomes, and we had a few. So I'll go through and I'll summarize the feedback we got from the 24th and how we reflected that, and then I'll summarize the changes that are in the proposed amendment as of this morning, if that works. The major feedback we got was pretty straightforward. We moved, actually, the resiliency question, as Council Direction said, that's actually not an outcome. That's just a thing that we want to support. So we moved that out of the outcomes and it's into the priorities.
Yeah.
There was a lot of conversation around what does it mean for this work to align with Climate Smart, and we talked about different ways for that to happen. The additional edits this morning, I think, so under the safety language, they strengthen the language to say significant progress towards zero deaths in all modes of transportation. We had an addition to mobility to talk about the increase in roadway and transit reliability, so that's are things predictable, essentially? Do buses come when they're supposed to come? is your commute home, if you're driving, roughly the same length every time? Is it predictable? And then we had some additional changes to clarify the language around climate smart strategy.
So is that all reflective of what you guys discussed in sense?
I believe so. I think the language under greenhouse gas emission reductions, is that the danger when you're defining outcomes is to define an outcome over which you don't have complete control. And the language that current now with the recommendation of changes identifies that, you know, we will achieve what we can achieve that we're able to achieve.
Bye. I think that is always a challenge. I think we'll have to go through some of these outcomes and determine how we can or whether we can measure. But I would like to speak to one of the greatest villains of congestion, which is diesel particulate matter. A local study showed that it is disproportionately affecting African-American community, or 2.5 times as likely to be affected by diesel particulate matter, and the Latino community is also 2.5 times as likely to be affected by that. So it's an equity issue as well.
People have made that comment before, and I would like to see where that comes from, because when you look at adjacency of neighborhoods to interstate highways, for instance, it's pretty ubiquitous around the region. And people who live in Tigard and Tualatin and Lake Oswego live next to Interstate 5 as well.
I think it affects every part of our region.
I think that's a point, that it's an issue, period.
Councilor Brooks, we can get that study.
I'm hearing violent
agreement, which is awesome. So I think Councilor Chase has an amendment.
So I would just propose that we add a target for diesel particulate matter reductions.
How would we accomplish that with this measure?
Well, I don't want to get too prescriptive because I think that needs to be determined, but I 50% of the diesel particulate matter comes from construction equipment, so there are strategies to around construction, and so for example, and I'm not saying this is the strategy that should be proposed at this time, I think we should evaluate all options, but constructing and construction projects requiring clean diesel engines. So that's one way that it can be done.
So we had a significant comment on the 24th about including in, which document was that in? We were talked about environmentally responsible construction practices. Yeah. Something like that language probably would be appropriate here.
And in this case, it's also emphasizing that because some of the big yellow machines that do construction work, including street and road construction, are some of the worst violators in terms of big black clouds coming out the back end. We're doing our part on garbage trucks. Columbia Corridor Association gives grants to companies to drill the old engines and put in new engines, get new trucks. So another step in getting our regional partners who construct and maintain these streets to use construction equipment that achieves clean diesel standards.
You have a suggestion?
It sounds like you're talking about a process a process comment, as opposed to necessarily an overall measurement of a set of projects.
I think we need to step back. I think what's been proposed is a performance metric. We don't need to get into how everybody would actually meet that, but we are going to be looking at scenarios in which, if we can model this, and I'm looking for head nods or no, or making estimates of some sort.
Go ahead, Tyler. I think the way to do this would be through the IGAs that we would write and develop with our local project delivery agencies and ask them to use the clean construction requirements.
Yes.
The proposal is we have an outcome.
Yes.
Reducing particulate matter from diesel. Councilor Chase is not proposing the methodology.
Okay. I apologize. I withdraw my two particular comments about particulates.
It was just to measure it. I can't promise to model it. We will find a way to measure it. Exactly.
Yes. So I think what we're asking for is acknowledgement on the performance metric that we will be looking at this topic and as an overall plan, right? As an overall plan, are we meeting a reduction, essentially, in or at least a stabilization, if not we're not trying to make things worse, and we will look at this and however jurisdictions want to propose or the task force wants to propose that we try to reach these things, then we've sent the message. Okay.
So that's great. With these, and Councillor Chase, in terms of that one, of that last item, it was particularly focused on diesel particulate. These appear to me to really reflect Metro's values overall, this whole list, and it's saying, you know, we want this to achieve these values that are pretty well recognized as regional values. And the diesel particulate is very specific, and that's fine. I'm wondering if you had wanted to lift it up a bit.
May I try? The greenhouse gas emissions reduction goal could actually be a clean air goal. And we could have greenhouse gas emission reduction underneath it, as well as particulate.
Yes. That okay. Sounds good.
It's fine, as long as that language about greenhouse gas emissions
states.
Doesn't go away.
It's tied back to our climate smart.
It's still in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just how
you reorder it. In terms of that section of the greenhouse gas emission, which is now the clean air outcome section, sideboards are important to me. I think that's for me, it was one of the most significant additions, targets to extend achievable by the scale of the overall investment. Just thank you. I don't want to be responsible for solving all the climate change impact.
You can't do it with one investment.
You're being an elected official, aren't you? You've become responsible for everything.
Okay, so with that, are we agreed on we? Are you all agreed enough on the substance here?
Yes.
To send this
forward? Yes.
Yay.
Good work,
everyone.
Okay. We're there.
One task done. And we have 25 minutes left to do the others.
OT 2020.
I'm assuming you have some flexibility. You guys need to tell me how much flexibility you have.
We have all the flexibility in the world, right up to 5.
Pardon? All of it up to 5. Okay. All right. Then we have
that true?
Goes.
Is that true for everybody?
I'm good up to 5.
Okay. Everyone good up to 5?
Okay.
All right. So we're going to move on to the next agenda topic. So we have talked to you, to all of you, and you've heard most eloquently from President Peterson about the corridor approach and the need to solve or to address large swaths of our region's needs, not in an individual project-by-project level, but by looking at the needs of the way that people move around, which is where this corridor concept came from. And today we are, we're still struggling with the word. Corridor is a word that we all feel comfortable with, and if you ask someone off the street, they might not know what it meant. But
I should say hallway, but, you know, who knows?
But we found that out with the Southwest Corridor, and we would use that as a term, and we mean a swath of the Portland metro area that's like a mile wide. And people would say, well, do you mean Barber Boulevard? And that, to them, that's the Southwest Corridor, is the street of Barber Boulevard.
Yeah. But we know that many of the corridors in our region need significant investment in order to keep up with the growth that is happening, to improve safety, to help connect people and get them to where they live, work, and play. So today we're going to talk about, based on previous council direction, how we've identified some of the corridors in the region that need the most investment, and how we're also proposing to start the conversation with the task force about how we build that list and how we and then prioritize that list to bring it back to you for consideration. So what we'll be asking you today, I want to be really clear, we're not asking you to say, are these the corridors that you want to invest in, or is this the full list of what you want to consider? We're going to be asking if this is the foundation from which we can start the conversation with the task force members to have them bring back a larger and then a smaller list to you for consideration. I've got the clicker.
I guess I'd like to pause, Tyler.
Yeah.
That's such an important piece as we move forward. I want to make sure everybody understood that in terms of what Tyler just said is using the method they've talked about today. The goal is to take that range of corridors and say, okay, let's bring this down to a foundation to begin the conversation, which can get bigger and then would get smaller.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, I'm already being lobbied for specific corridors, and so
my shield is
going to get lobbied. And I think that's really important because we each have corridors in our mind that are important. I know which one that's not on this list, right? That is going forward, that I am very personally tied to, but it is based on a scientific methodology to start the discussion. So I think we all have to take a step back from our personal project and our personal corridors and say, okay, now what do we put in front of this committee to start the conversation? Because we need a starting place, and to not have it tied emotionally, right, at first, and then we will get there. But I think that's a really important point, Councillor Craddock.
Well, I appreciate the work you've done, because I'm already thinking about what's written here, and when you get lobbied or when you're being lobbied, to think about how that request fits what we're doing. And so I look forward to the next steps and see what you come up with. I know you have this map, so but.
Well, we look forward to your next steps. all right, so. Oh, sorry, Councillor Lewis.
I'd just like to take this as a moment to underscore that President Peterson just said that this is the beginning, this is the start of where we're leaping off from, to the words in the mouth, he didn't say leaping.
Leap of faith, leap.
Yeah, we have to get moving, and we can't get things perfect before we get moving. We all received some communication from Chair Bernard and my largest constituency in Congress County. There's some dis-ease around how quickly things are moving, and words on paper are real. And I have given assurances back to my colleagues at Congress County that this is our beginning point. And I just really want to underscore this as a beginning point, because there are really important corridors identified, all of them in RTP, that are not showing up on this map. And I believe, based on how I envision the process to go, that is okay. But it's only because we are just beginning to start the filing process, which will, you know, eat the elephant before getting narrow again. And Clackamas has to be part of eating the elephant. For me, it's that metaphor. Yeah.
More elephants, please.
but yeah, I'm happy to talk more about conversations with Clackamas. You all received that letter, but now it's just a really important time to note that there's advance in the system, and that's okay for now.
It's okay for now.
Okay. So with that.
Tyler, I derailed
you. No, that was perfect, and I, everything that was, I thank you all. So now I will move on to look at the maps, which will serve as the foundation and the starting point for additional conversation. We received council direction, and I will note that was the previous council, but we've heard those same themes re-emphasized by this council as well, that you wanted us to take a data-driven look at understanding where we needed investment in the region in order to improve our transportation system. And the priorities that you wanted us to consider in that data-driven look were looking at safety, where are people getting hit and killed on our roadways, and looking at mobility, which is essentially how easy is it for people to get around, and how much time are they spending stuck in traffic. And you were very clear as part of that process that you also wanted us, being stuck in traffic was not just something that happened to people who are driving, it is also something that happens to people who are on the bus or wanting to get on the bus. And then you also asked us to consider existing RTP maps, including the freight network and the active transportation network. So major shout out to Matt and Alan, who are over in the corner and have spent too many hours of their life on this work, and the host of other folks who weighed in and participated and helped in the planning department. But they identified using congestion data, transit reliability data, safety data, crash data, and then our freight network map and our active transportation map, and a project active transportation project development process led by Lake. They identified the 111 corridors in the region which have consistent issues with safety and mobility right now. So this is actually 14, 15, 16 data. I'm looking at Matt. Close enough. And so these are all 111 that have struggled with those issues. Matt then narrowed it to the top 60. And that is, so of those corridors, which of those struggle the most with either safety or congestion? And we're happy at any point to talk to you about which ones struggle with safety or which ones struggle with congestion. That's all available. We also overlaid that map on top of our what I in my head have been referring to as our equity zones, but it's the blue identifies where we have a high proportion of communities of color, English language learners, and or low-income communities. It's the same map that you used for the regional transportation plan to identify areas where you wanted to prioritize investment. So you should have the map in front of you. You'll see it is a broad swath of our system, right? I think when we put the 111 corridor map up in front of some folks, they said, isn't that just all the roads in the region? you know, the answer is no, but to people who don't work with us every day, this still looks like a lot. And these are roads that many of us travel in some way or another every day, if not more than once a day. And they're roads where people are frustrated and angry and being late to get to work or to pick up their kids or scared to cross the street because they're worried they're going to get killed. So they represent real experiences by the people that you serve. We've proposed using this map to start the conversation to identify where those real issues are happening. Of course, this talks about current issues, right? What people are struggling with right now. And as an agency that's focused on preparing for growth and helping our region manage and prepare for growth, that's another key component of what you all think about and deal with every day. So this map is a little bit hard for me to see right now, so sorry. It's much better over here or on the map in front of you. But this map identifies projected employment and residential growth by 2040 in the region. So the greener it is, the more growth, the more it will grow by 2040. And we know that a lot of our partners are thinking about how they prepare for this kind of growth, how they continue to serve people, and how that works. And some of the concepts that we've heard around that, we mentioned some of them as examples of projects that maybe don't address any of the corridors that we just had on the map before, but that are very closely related to people's preparation for growth. And those include things like the downtown transit tunnel, the Clackamas to Columbia corridor, the Oak Grove to Lake Oswego bike and pedestrian bridge, and an improved bus network and express bus route network throughout the region.
Curiosity, I guess.
Yes.
There are very large swaths that, by their tint, don't even have less than 10 additional jobs.
10%.
Thank you.
That's better, huh? Less than 10 would be stark.
I didn't see any percentage indicator on here, so thank you.
Yeah.
Say that again.
It's percent increase in jobs or population on a per acre basis, not number of jobs.
Oh, wow. Oh, wait, I'm getting a head shake. Alan, can you correct me?
It's a jobs plus population per acre.
What percentage?
No, full number, just growth over the next 20.
There's an acre in Portland that's not going to add 10 people in the next 30 years. I reject that argument. Sorry. Our track record is we've grown more than any other jurisdiction in the region, any other geographic area of similar size in the last decade, and that's going to continue, even though we don't have any vacant land. I don't understand why those areas show no growth. They should be yellow at least.
No, I don't think we actually have the map, so.
But I didn't do the math.
I think we're happy to sit down and talk through the data at another point.
I don't mean to be partisan picking on a single area, but there's other areas that are quite large that have opportunities.
Oh, thanks.
So there's a method of labeling problem.
And figure out why.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm done with the speech volume.
This is like the gray part.
Okay. Yeah.
There could be an underlying modeling reason why.
Yep.
What it is intended to show is where the most growth is happening, and so we'll get back to you.
Off the top of my head, this looks like the parts of the map that are yellow, which are the areas that are existing single-family neighborhoods where we have a charter prohibition that says we can't regulate. So it just looks to me like we could have made a model assumption, and I don't think it's worth the council's time for us to try to look that up here. Let us go back and answer.
Just don't make me take this on the road.
So I guess the question for you all would be, in terms of the principles, debating, you know, and I understand the point, but the principle of looking at...
We're not adopting this map. We're not adopting this map.
Right.
Yeah. And
where the
step.
Greatest safety and congestion issues are and where you expect the most growth if it's appropriate to use those as the basis. Sorry, President.
I just want to add, this is a kind of a last-minute ask on my part as why you haven't seen this map before in terms of growth, because I felt like if we were going to just base an entire discussion of the region on existing conditions, we kind of missed the mark for a long-term vision. And allowing for that conversation about what the project's corridors are of the future that we need to consider, or sub-areas of the region that are going to need a little bit more visionary work to decide how to create connectivity in places that don't have connectivity today. We've added all these urban growth boundary expansions within the last month that as they grow out, they are isolated. At the edge, what does that connectivity look like? What does that mean for the other side of the region in terms of connectivity? So allowing that conversation to happen and encouraging it rather than just focusing on the existing conditions solely without acknowledging growth areas.
I'm happy to do something about adding more land to the urban growth boundary to avoid having more problems, meaning don't add more land to the urban growth boundary, but I take your point.
I have a question then. So if you're focusing this on where you think growth is going to occur and where jobs are going to occur, right? So I live in I represent part of the region where it's challenging. You want more jobs, but they're not coming that direction. And people often move there because it's less expensive. So how do we accommodate for that dynamic? And I don't have an answer. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I think that the big picture question is, as people move there, they would be reflected in that population, right? The population component of that. It's not an and or. And you know, I think what we see in those places and the principles that this council just put forward are saying those are still areas where we view transportation investment as a way to help address concerns around displacement and other issues. And safety, often those areas are also areas that struggle with the safety questions and the lack of accessibility and the lack of mobility. So I would guess that many of those areas pop up on the 60 corridor map, and I think parts of your region pop up in this growth map as well, and they really align, the concerns that you've outlined align with the principles that this council just put forward.
Is that a different diagram than the one we're looking at, the growth in top 60?
It's the same one. So it's the growth map, and then we overlaid the 60 corridors on it. And this
one has the 111.
Sorry?
This one has 111, just FYI.
Yes, that's the numbers are, we kept the numbers the same between the 111 map and this map so that we could use one key to identify the roads.
So there's some lower numbers that are no longer represented.
Got it.
So
yes.
It's not 111 corridors up there. It's just there.
Got it.
That's the number of the original number of the corridor. Named the corridor.
Could be the letter.
Yeah.
I can't help but notice that the Southwest Corridor light rail alignment is not identified.
I think when I look at the map and I see both I-5 South along that whole space and Barbara Boulevard pop up, to me that...
That's the gray line.
Pop up as a corridor that deals with significant congestion and safety issues.
That's what the corridor measurement is based on, that. It's not identifying investment corridors, it's identifying corridors where there are currently significant challenges.
Yes.
And if you look at the growth map and think about where Southwest Corridor goes, it's heading down to an area that doesn't have an identified corridor, it has a significant amount of growth, so, which is why we've been planning the Southwest Corridor.
So, yes, Councilor Chair.
Well, I guess it's similar to that, which is sort of thinking about, you know, who might the stepchildren be in this process, and what are the transit and active transportation projects that might actually relieve some of these corridors but may not be really directly in proximity. So, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking about, this is sort of myopic, my own district, but as an example of something I know, which is the North Portland Greenway, that is something that is often difficult to fund with different sources of funding, and transportation funds in particular. So are there active transportation projects that may actually relieve significant congestion, but then, and even for example, the I-5 corridor, but are not in a proximity to that? Is there, you know, how do those, are there situations like that that are a little bit kind of challenging for us?
So I'll say that I've heard both Councillor Stacey and President Peterson articulate this really clearly, that often the solution to a corridor that has a problem might not be exactly on that same corridor. So Councillor Stacey in his district talks about the Division-Clinton situation, where Division has a significant safety problem, and the answer might be improving the Clinton street to make it safer for people walking and biking, rather than rather than putting that effort into Division. Often, and some, as you point out, those solutions are not always directly parallel. Sometimes they are slightly in a different location, but if they are providing a solution to an existing problem, right, that my understanding from this council is that's the sort of investment you want to consider. You're looking to solve problems.
It seems like it could get challenging, you know, I'm not proposing anything, but it just seems like it could be challenging in terms of, you know, I can generally probably make an argument that just about any project would be a relief for, you know, a corridor. And so I don't know if it's a transit and active transportation kind of component that's more specific, but I guess I just am identifying that and as something that still seems unclear. Would need to be worked through.
And I think this council will have an, you know, you're in, quote unquote, the driver's seat on this, and you will be providing guidance as these projects come forward and say that, you know, is that addressing this need? Is that real? Is that a real solution? Is that what this council wants to invest as part of that solution?
And I believe the purpose of the growth map, in addition to the corridors map, is to sort of open some of that conversation. So it's not just looking at places we know there are problems, but what are solutions that would help connect some of these places and solve some of those problems. But that's the concept of what we've been working to get these maps developed for today's conversation.
Councilor Gonzalez, it looks like
you. I just wanted to toss my two cents that I feel comfortable with the modeling of the corridors and the growth forecasting and understand the general concept of what the maps are supposed to show in our conversations moving forward. So I welcome us to move the conversation forward. More questions pertaining, of course.
Thank you. So you don't need a facilitator, just, you know. So good question. And I was going to say, too, it sounds like the conversation you're having is exactly what you want to send out to the task force to some degree. So with Councillor Gonzalez's lead, our folks good with sending this forward. And Tyler, had you finished?
Can I just...
The first time I saw this, without the blobs, just the lines, it's kind of a Rorschach test. It remains that way. I see certain things, Juan Carlos sees certain things, Sam sees certain things, and maybe we'll have a consensus about the range of things.
So just to kind of close this, this discussion, this framing around the corridors is exactly the type of conversation we want to encourage in the region, because we want to invest in a long-term vision. And if we are starting with a project list, how does that describe to anybody on the backside of this what we were trying to achieve? So I just want to make sure, this lays out how we could possibly set a culture for conversations in the region for the next 20 to 30 years. And I think it's a big step, and I just want to recognize that this is not going into a transportation package in the same way that we have done in the United States ever. So it's going to feel very uncomfortable to a lot of folks that have projects that they specifically want to get in, but I think justifying and making the case and starting the conversation from a systems perspective, which is what we are responsible to do as the region, is the right place to start. So thank you.
All right, guys, part 3 of 3. So you all just had a great conversation about what you want to use as the foundation for the task force to come back and provide you with some additional refinement and thoughts for you to further consider. So that's a lovely transition into the task force. So the Transportation Funding Task Force is something that we have talked about with all of you previously, and it is pretty standard for Metro to have an advisory body on major decisions, whether it's a parks measure or a housing measure or a transportation measure. And so this is following in that line with, I think, a couple key differences. You have suggested that you would like them to advise you as the council directly. We had a great conversation last time about how you want them to work from existing Metro policy. So that's both the things that you've discussed today and policy that you have already put your stamp of approval on, including the Regional Transportation Plan, Climate Smart Strategy, our strategy to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, equity and inclusion, and the 2040 map, amongst other things. You said you wanted that to be a body that represented the community as a whole and the breadth of people that you want to be excited about this measure. So elected officials, community leaders, business leaders, people who are engaged in this from all sides. And President Peterson has put together a proposed list and a list of potential members, and she will be bringing that to you next week for confirmation. And before, in advance of that conversation, we wanted to talk to you about their role and what you'll be asking them. President Peterson, do you want to mention anything before I go to the next slide? Okay, great. I don't have it in front of me. To talk a little bit about decision-making, this is a diagram that we put together that shows how we envision the decision-making to go. Metro Council you are the decision-makers. You are choosing to put this measure on the ballot, and so you will have the final decision. This Transportation Funding Task Force will guide you in that process. They will provide recommendations. They will provide feedback, and it's likely that you'll have some back and forth between the council and the task force as you figure out these issues and come to consensus. You've made it clear that you want your decisions to be, you want to be educated about what the community is interested in, what your key partners are saying, and in particular, in a way that aligns with our DEI strategy, you want to make sure that we're reaching out to elevate voices of people of color in that process. So the community and partner engagement is there to show. Both the council and the task force will hear from people in the community, hear from key leaders, hear from the cities and counties and agencies that we work with. And then Worth noting that JPACT will be consulted throughout this process, but this is not an MPO function. You will not require their approval in order to move forward with any decisions. Any questions?
So, do we ever have joint sessions with any of the task force, or during the housing bond process, did we have a joint session?
No.
No? Okay.
We could watch.
I sat in on several of the meetings.
Not that I know what a joint session necessarily means. I just know Councillor Chase has mentioned the possibility, and
yeah,
that just sparked my mind.
I find it intriguing as well. There's something, exciting about getting a task force to form recommendations that we will respond to. There's also something frustrating about it when you're elected to represent your constituencies and the region, to watch while others make recommendations that one hopes we wouldn't have to undo or alter significantly. So there's a tension between getting the best possible input from knowledgeable people who interact with one another, and there's a frustrating sort of glass wall separating us element of it that if there's a creative idea for overcoming it, I'd be open to that.
One of the challenges of being directly engaged with advisory groups or task force is that your presence there tends to influence what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And we want them to be somewhat within the scope of their charge. We want them to be somewhat autonomous and come up with perhaps things that we haven't thought of. My experience both at Metro and back in Tigard was that if you're there, they tend to turn to you and look to you for guidance even within their meeting. And that it flaws
right.
The outcome.
Yeah.
Thus the glass wall.
Yeah.
I think that was well said, and I think that's an important component. I think where things have worked well is when we have kind of an upfront conversation that sets so that we're clear about what our expectations are and what our hopes are, and then they have that information as they're deliberating, and then you stay out. I think we've had good joint sessions with CORE. We've had good joint sessions with Merck, and so it is something that we have from time to time done. But I do think as we are going about our business, where we have this really well articulated information going, I think that's really fantastic. I think if there are places for us to have a launching conversation or a check-in conversation that says we're not telling you what to do, we're just sharing what our expectations and ideas are in this process, and then we're getting back out. I think those are a valuable kind of place where there's a very limited amount of engagement.
I think that's exactly right, and that's why we spent so much time crafting the policy sideboards, so we could be as clear as possible in the questions that we're asking the committee to answer, which is the next part of this, needed to be very clear. So if they're not clear to you as we go through it, then we need to clarify. But I also think that there's a possibility that we could potentially get some input from them. They're going to ask for clarification as we go through this process no matter what. And if they identify large policy questions, I think it's appropriate to have the co-chairs come back in a work session and kind of work through these issues with us as we go along, because they will have questions. And it should be for the entire council to kind of work through those issues. So.
May I step in and take my facilitator hat off for a second and put my public involvement specialist hat on? So I think you guys have all articulated this really well. And just as it turns out, JLA is on the team that will be facilitating doing the public involvement. So we will be facilitating this task force, and it will probably be Allison. And one of the things we always tell a group is that we want them to understand we want them to clearly understand the expectations of the decision makers that are going to have to adopt the recommendations or to act on that, because the last thing we want to do is have a group work through a whole process, come up with a recommendation, have it come back to you, and you go, that doesn't work, we're going to change it. So communication between the two is really critical, setting some clear expectations and letting them know if it's going in a direction that isn't. And we always tell them, you can do that. You can make recommendations that are counter to what the expectations are, but then they know. And so when you guys change it, they're not mad at you because you changed it. They send it back to you expecting it. So that's the kind of thing we will take to them and make sure happens. And there are plenty of cases where there has been a liaison. You know, Councillor Chase did the liaison on the low-income task force and on the clean air construction task force. So, you know, as somebody, it's good for them to know somebody that's a decision maker is listening as well and taking that back. So those are all opportunities for you, and I don't know whether you've decided whether you're going to be sitting in with them, President, or not.
No.
So it really is just a matter of, we will make sure that there are links that come back to you so you will know what direction they're headed and you can reorient if needed. So now I'll put my facilitator up.
I would say, just to clarify, I would say I don't want to be in attendance in the meetings for the very reasons we just talked about in terms of influence and, but, you know, making sure that availability for the co-chairs to bring those ideas, issues, questions forward and when it necessary to come back here.
And it is a mighty big committee. Yes,
Christine, are you up first?
I defer to you.
Thank you. Councilor. Senior indeed.
In tenure.
Of course. Not age, surely. I am very heartened to see not only arrows between the council and the community partner engagement process, but between the task force and the engagement process. I have a suggestion for the letter inviting folks to the task force. I don't need to... I don't need to move it now, but what's this?
That's what you're just passing out the letter.
Right. So this letter is for action today, if I understand it correctly. And I had added a sentence.
Are you showing, is there a letter to the community leader or to the task force?
Your community leader.
It's to the task force. It says
community. As a surrogate for the name of the task force nominee.
It's the invitation or direction.
One of the experiences we had with a governmental and community-based organization steering committee on the division transit project was that, as Steve Novick, then city commissioner for transportation, said, wait a minute, we each have a green card, a yellow card, and a red card, and I represent 600,000 people in the city of Portland, and Kim over there represents, you know, some people in East Portland, but he gets the same number of red cards, and you know, our facilitator said yes, because what we're trying to achieve here is consensus and to work through issues that are raised. And Kim and other community representatives regularly and systematically went back to their constituencies, communities of color, low-income communities, geographic communities, so that they were prepared to talk about interests that were real to the constituencies they represent. And what I want all of our task force members to take on is the responsibility of that two-way communication during the task force's deliberation. We're not asking them solely for their wisdom, but for the cumulative and community wisdom of the groups and organizations and interests that they represent. So I'll read it now, but we don't have to decide it
now. So you're adding a statement because of that.
That it's the charge says... it's added to the last two paragraphs. You will represent the needs and interests of your constituency and community regularly by sharing the task force's deliberations with those you work with and represent, and by receiving their input to guide you in those deliberations. So it's a matter of checking in with folks that you're you're working with to make sure you're still representing their interests. Don't need to have that acted on now. The letter can come up at the appropriate time, but I'm very pleased to see that triangle in the relationships. So there's cross-communication between the task force and communities that are engaged in this process.
Good suggestion, I think.
Yeah. So I think part of the engagement process we were talking about is whether many of these members could actually sponsor specific other tables.
Uh-huh.
Right? So if you have somebody who's very interested in the smart city kind of initiative, that they get together with smart city folks and we facilitate that, or they get together with folks that are worried about environmental justice, right, and recognize that group, so that we would help them have that conversation. Because some of them are not elected officials. Some of them are
They don't need to be reelected, but
they're not there to represent a constituency. So how do we elevate some of these issues and allow that to happen? It's not going to happen on its own. So how do we help have that happen?
Great, great suggestion.
Councilor Luce.
So I guess the piece that's not in the triangle is that to our constituents, we are the right door and come for questions, and to just ask that staff help us be responsive to constituents. I already have an email from somebody in my district saying, how do I follow this work?
Yeah.
But I think while not wanting to hover or be in the glass wall, we need to be able to give timely and good information while respecting that our president is the actual liaison, but we are liaisoning this process to our constituents, and to make sure that if they ask us questions, we know where to send them and where we are in the process.
One thing that our staff is great at doing when we've had programs like this before is, as issues arise, they provide us with suggested talking points so that we have things to go to if we're asked specific questions.
Yeah, I'd like to ask.
I see you're asking that it be clear that is another role.
Dimensionality to that triangle. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Third dimension.
Wow.
Okay.
It's getting good.
My comment wasn't pertinent to this discussion.
Okay. All right. So are folks comfortable with the letter?
The letter. With my amendment.
The charge. Well, the charge. The whole.
Well, I'm supportive. I just like it, you know, that they're not focusing on a bunch of projects. They're focusing on the outcomes. And I think this is going to be, all of us will be put in situations where we have to emphasize that over and over again, because we're already getting lobbied on specific projects. And that decision, I'm thinking out loud here, so excuse me. So they're giving us feedback, we'll advise the council on these questions, but they won't be suggesting suggesting specific projects. So at what point in all of this do projects get decided? After the referendum is passed, or what's that step?
So remember going back to the policy sideboards piece? Can we pull that out? We are actually asking them for corridors and first phase project lists and a second phase community directed investments. So we know in a lot of these corridors that they're identified projects. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be looking for that level of detail from them and coming back that, again, specific projects on those corridors are known, but there's a lot that's unknown. So what is that first phase, and then how do we move through and help communities who have really high priority corridors who may not have had a corridor plan done actually get there?
I don't see that in here.
We're not talking about the document we just approved, right,
Councilor? I think Councilor Craddock's question is should there be more specificity on not just the prioritizing the corridors, but the programmatic investments within the corridors?
And I think the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth bullet down is where we tried to get at that. What programs to support this vision should the Metro Council consider for a measure?
I think that gets unclear because we're asking for programs
and
programmatic investment
within
the corridors.
So, We can absolutely add in a question around,
or just add it.
Yeah.
We're also asking for programs. So we need to leave that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. So the number three bullet, the Metro Council has identified candidate quarters. I have to say that's, I missed that part. So it says, are there other places that the Metro Council should also consider? So we're asking them to look at the list that we've created, but then in addition, do they have something to add to that based
or
on
subtract.
The outcomes we're trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is in there. I'm sorry, I didn't read that thoroughly. So
I think that it's a good question, and we should be more specific about adding prioritized programmatic investment within those corridors.
Okay. Any other suggestions?
About the letter?
Yeah, anything else that's not?
This is not a council proceeding, but I think there's distributed to you a copy of the draft letter that contains a red line amendment suggestion. Has that happened?
Okay. No. But it has been emailed to staff, and we can incorporate it into the next.
It's in here, and the red line's just removed.
What's the deal?
No, it's not. Bob,
what are we talking about?
Reread what you're suggesting.
Yeah.
Right. Just reread what you're suggesting.
First, you could refer to the final line of the third from last paragraph. It now says, you will represent the needs and interests of your constituency and community and bring the task force's decisions back to those you work with and represent. And I add a little detail. You will represent the interests and needs and interests of your constituency and community regularly by sharing the task force's deliberations, not simply their decisions, with those you work with and represent, and by receiving their input to guide you in your deliberations or the committee's deliberations.
I appreciate that.
So it's a back and forth as opposed to, here's what we decided, guys.
Yeah, it's my decision. Yeah.
I agree. I think it's important to set that expectation for people that they are kind of a mouthpieces for the community groups or constituents that they represent.
Yeah.
I mean, whether we can actually mandate that when it starts, who knows?
Well, it's an aspirational standard. I'll grant you that. Yeah.
Well, it's facilitation.
What you're asking of them. So when you do this, you're specifying what you're asking of them. So are folks comfortable with that addition?
Yeah.
I was going to say, as facilitation occurs, you could bring up that statement and say, what have you heard from your constituents? What have you heard from your coworkers? I don't know, whoever they're... And help remind them that
we're supposed to be gathering
there.
That input.
Right.
So, Greg, you can bring us back a report next time.
Okay.
Talk to CCB.
When is this letter planned on being sent out, more or less?
After they're confirmed. So we'll be back next week.
Imminently.
List.
Yes. We'll be back next week with the list. President Peterson will be asking for confirmation of her appointment, and after that is approved, we will.
Okay. And I don't think I've seen a list of the.
It's on Granicus. I'm just kidding.
Whoa! Has that been sent out to us? And if it is, I'm sorry.
It's been a while. We did come through and brief each of you on both the sideboards piece, and we talked about the list at that time.
There's been so many briefings.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We can circle back with you.
If you're like me, it's upside down with some other papers on top of it. I mean, not to have it visible, and then I forget about it.
However, we can make sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Please.
And remind you of the folks that are on the list, yeah.
So in preparation for the next meeting, staff will get that out. Are folks good with the charge? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That is your work for today. And we came in before 5 o'clock, but there are some next steps. You want to hit the next step?
May I just ask, could you distribute the revised letter?
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
once we... It's gone somewhere. Did you give me a pile of them? My esteemed colleague, Beth Cohen, gave me a pile of these things that I'm complaining about not having available. These are the red line versions.
Yeah.
I apologize to my colleagues for that.
Why don't we get you copies of anything when they're redrafted so you have copies of clean, final versions?
Actually, if there's one more point I can make with regards to the task force, I'm not sure... As Metro grows in its role of being a leader in the region for racial equity, when we bring together stakeholders, is there anything we do to get people up to a baseline understanding, especially for people in non-traditional justice sectors?
Yes.
That was actually something I was going to bring up, because we had a test case of that with the President's Advisory Committee, which we have formed to be able to kind of vet ideas to, no matter what the topic may be at Metro, and just get some feedback. And the diversity of folks at the table showed us clearly that we have some terminology. We knew going in corridors was a difficult, not concept, but term.
Yeah.
So once you had visual imagery, they came together on that, but also that the depth of understanding around transportation was eclipsed by others at the table who had more experience. And so how do we make sure that that doesn't happen in this task force?
I know more than you, yeah.
Yeah, and so I have some conversations I need to follow up on now, because I think those folks felt a little overwhelmed at the table with their first transportation conversation, where in other conversations they're going to be the experts at the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that brings up an even better point, because I wasn't even thinking about transportation terminology or engineering or anything from that. I was thinking more in terms of conversations around race and racial justice. Let's say we have stakeholders or people on this committee, the task force, that throw the word white supremacy out. And that's a big triggering word for some folks that don't have that baseline understanding of why that word is used in the context that it's used. So in addition to having a baseline kind of perhaps training on the kind of transportation modes that we're exploring, I think it also behooves us to work on a model for this, for the Parks and Nature Bond, for everything that we do in terms of the stakeholders and how we bring them together. I think that should be a really big part of our DEI and our racial equity strategy. And that just hit me now.
Yeah. I appreciate that, and we will both do an overview of our DEI strategy and what it means, but then we're working with Rahi's team. We will have Scott Wynn trainings available. He's been doing at Metro a lot of our both sort of intro to racial justice and racial equity trainings across the agency, as well as higher level advanced trainings. So we'll make those available to all the task force members free of charge, and then see if there are any specific things that we need to follow up with any of them. So we're trying to work with our DEI team to identify the best way to make sure everyone is at a certain level.
It's, when you say made available, do you mean voluntary opt-in, or the first session is legitimately, let's talk about these topics?
I think that's a big difference, and I guess I would promote this. Yes. I think there needs to be a conversation on every one of those principles of what does it mean to lead with equity, right? That is not a conversation people are used to. So I would put it in the first session and not make it an opt-in. Otherwise, I'd make it a mandate that you can't actually attend the meetings until you get the training. I mean, it's one or the other. So
next steps, are we good?
Next steps are, as we discussed, we will be back. We'll see you next week for the third of our three in a row to confirm the task force members, and that will be through a resolution. So that will be a formal process. In late February, we are hoping to seat the task force, and as we discussed, there'll be a lot of sort of education up time for them, and then they'll begin the decision making, and we plan to come back to you in late March with their first set of recommendations to get your feedback and take it back to them. And then again at the end of April, with hopefully criteria that they are recommending to narrow the corridors to consider for investment. So that's the next big milestone, but we'll be back in March before then. Let's get moving.
I just want to say thank you to the staff. Andy and Tyler have been on top of this for now 2 years prior to me getting on, and also have done an immense lift in kind of the mindset around how to move this forward. And so I just want to say thank you. It has been a big lift, and it will continue to be a big lift, and good job.
Thank you, and working with us are many, many other staff. So
yes. Look around the room.
Yeah.
Look all around.
Agreed. All right. With that, we have Councilor Communications. Actually, no. Before you all get up and leave, I'm not letting you out. There is one question on the table. I just didn't want to bring it up. It's not worth having the conversation up under the business meeting. Glean is looking for a Metro Council representative. Councilor Dirksen was on it last year. I wanted to open it up and see if there's any volunteers.
Familiar with the program?
Yes.
So they're looking for one councilor. And
nominate Christine.
For the next year to be a judge, correct?
It's really fun.
Sounds really fun.
It is really fun.
Oh, it's actually a two-year. No, they do a two-year period. Yes, it's for this year. So are we in agreement that Councilor Lewis can be our representative this year?
Fantastic agreement.
All right.
Yeah. You'll really like it. It's a blast.
If I may, the first meeting will be next Friday from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Oh, now, wait a minute. How's that, Christine?
You know what? Never mind.
Wow, that's a long time.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think so. It's so, yeah. PM.
Yeah, she's right.
Hey.
We're going to go. All right. And then I had been wanting to mention the President's Advisory Council. We did pull it together. A lot of you had asked for the list that was provided to you. It was a really good group, and they, like I said, they did have a wide range of questions around the transportation that got us really thinking. But the amount of vetting that we have been doing in the background to get to this point, so that we weren't bringing things to you that wouldn't be palatable to the rest of the region, has been immense as well. So it wasn't just the President's Advisory Group, but we've been meeting, Andy and Tyler and I, with a lot of folks from around the region. And so we will have bumps along the road, but I feel confident as we proceed down this path, having put the time and energy in now. So just so you know that. With that, any other things for the good of the order? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you.